Hey, I'm Jessica Valenti, Guardian columnist, and this is What Would a Feminist Do? In our last episode of What Would a Feminist Do, we spoke about moving forward after the Women's March on Washington and the marches across the world. We talked about taking the momentum from the march and using it in meaningful actions going forward. But as each day after the march is filled with devastating news from the White House and around the country, I think all of us are having a hard time feeling positive and feeling energized. So let's try to talk about bright sides. Difficult political times have also produced some of the most influential music and art in history. Think about the music of the 60s or the Gorilla Girls and Keith Haring in the 80s. If anything good can come from the next 4 years, I'm at least hopeful for another great era of art. So today, I'm speaking with visual artist Tatiana Fazlalizadeh.
The first person that I'm trying to reach are women. I think that when you walk down the street and you are experiencing street harassment, I'm trying to provide some sense of defense for you.
But first, a short rant. So I'm thinking about something really specific this week, and that's a bill proposed in Texas that would make it legal for doctors to lie to pregnant women about the health of their fetus. Just to explain a little bit, it's a piece of anti-choice legislation, right, that wants to stop women from getting abortions if their fetus has an abnormality. So it says that if the doctor thinks the status of the fetus's health might lead the woman to end her pregnancy, he can keep that information from her. So if your fetus had a serious condition or was incompatible with life, your doctor could literally keep that information from you, and that would be legal. Because apparently women can't be trusted to make informed decisions. We need men to do that for us. It's hard to imagine anything more callous and unethical, but these are the times we're in, I guess. A time when Republicans believe that women have no right over their own bodies or even have the right to know what's happening with their own health and pregnancies. And I think what's hard is we're seeing horrible legislation like this every day, whether it has to do with reproductive rights or it has to do with immigration. It feels like it's all bad and it's all so overwhelming, which is why I'm so glad this week to take a slight break from policy to talk about how we can make it through difficult political times by focusing on art and culture. And to talk to me today about that is artist Tatiana Fazlalizadeh. So Tatiana, thank you so much for being here today.
Sure. I'm glad to be here.
So we're talking a little bit about art and politics and the intersection of those two things. Just to start off, can you give the listeners sort of an idea of what your art is about and how you got started?
Sure. So I am an artist who is mostly based in visual arts and painting and drawing. So my primary medium is oil painting, but over the past few years, I have ventured out into public art, doing murals, doing street art, doing wheat pasting, and doing a lot of work that is addressing women's issues and how we experience the public spaces. So moving throughout the streets, how we experience those spaces, and creating art that is reflecting that. So my work is pretty much based on women, people of color, queer folks, and how we kind of experience our daily lives based on what people project onto us and creating art based off of that. I'm looking at my life, the people around me, the people who are experiencing oppression, and how I can make art that is useful to them and trying to change the way that we are experiencing the world. So I have a project called Stop Telling Women to Smile, which is about particularly street harassment, gender-based street harassment.
Right. I think a lot of our listeners probably would be familiar with your street harassment series, which got like a ton of very deserved play online and sort of went viral, and they're so wonderful. And I know one of your more recent works has an image of four women, and it says America is black, it is native, it wears a hijab, it is Spanish speaking tongue, it is migrant, it is a woman, it is here, it has been here, it's not going anywhere. Has your work always been political?
The piece that you just mentioned about the America is black, that was a mural that I did in Oklahoma City that has gotten a really great reception that I was kind of surprised about.
Yeah.
I would say yes. I think my work has always been political. When I went to college at 17 years old, you know, I was the student in class making all of the work that was radical and Black and just about identity and race and all of those things. I think it's because I just kind of grew up in a household where my mother was always talking about that stuff. You know, race was always something that we were talking about, that was always on the table. And when I went to college and I was the only Black woman student in most, if not all, of my classes, you know, that was very important for me to speak to my culture, who I am as a person, and speak about it in a very angry way. You know, I was an angry, you know, college student. And being an adult woman, I'm still angry a lot. You know, I think I have a lot to be angry about. And so I create art that's based on that. You know, I use my art as a as an expression of just all of the stuff that I and my folks, we go through.
So. Yeah. And I'm interested in what you said about anger, because I feel like we are still sort of in this space. Like a question I get asked a lot is like, how do I talk about politics or feminism or justice issues without seeming angry? And for me, it feels like, well, you should be angry. And like, it's important to be angry. Like, do you feel like we're making any headway on this idea of like women's anger in art and sort of like in culture where we are right now?
I hope so. I get that, right? It's like, I think especially for women, and I think particularly Black women, we have this stereotype of being the angry Black woman. And so whenever you say something or you speak up for yourself or you're trying to position yourself in a way, you're looked at as being angry. And so I think a lot of times we kind of downplay ourselves and downplay our emotions. And we feel like we have this responsibility to always be happy and be nice and be ladylike and not be angry because we don't want to be called a bitch or you know. But I think that, again, there is something to anger. I think anger fuels a lot of things that have changed our culture over the years, you know. If you think about the revolutions and thinking about the rebellions and think about everything from Occupy Wall Street to Black Lives Matter, it's people being angry and going out in the streets and saying, we're not taking this. And so in order to change the way that we've been treated, I think that anger is a good emotion to fuel from, you know.
So what's sort of the difference? You said like some of your work, like the street harassment series, Stop Telling Women to Smile, is public art, right? Like, how does the reception sort of differ from something that you put out in public, something that you're putting on the street, to your other work?
You know, I think that public art is, I love public art. I think it's very important. I think that it is, there's a lot to it. It's very complicated in a lot of ways. And it makes it so specific because it's out in a public space. And so a lot of people have access to public art.
Right.
So it's you're putting something out in the environment and it's really not even yours anymore once you put it out in the environment. You know, it becomes a part of that wall, that block, that community, that city. It's a part of it. And so you're really kind of influencing the city in a way, the community in a way, because you are putting something into the environment as opposed to when I do an oil painting that's just in my studio or in a gallery, or I'm the only person that sees it, or I can put it online. But it doesn't really have the same effect as putting something out in the environment and anybody can walk by and see this. And it lives there. It has its own life, you know? And people engage with it. I was really surprised by the way that people engage with public art.
Yeah.
You know, they look at it, they take pictures with it, they write on it, they, you know, it really does become a part of this community in a way that affects the communication, I think, of the people in that community.
So when you put up a piece of public art, what's the hope for the engagement with the piece? What kind of reaction are you looking for or hoping for?
Well, I'm really hoping that people who walk past these pieces will stop and consider what the piece is saying and consider their role in sexism and racism. You know, I think for Stop Telling Them to Smile, the first person that I'm trying to reach are women. I think that when you walk down the street and you are experiencing street harassment, I'm trying to provide some sense of defense for you so that if you turn a corner and you walk past one of these pieces, you feel like, yes, that's how I feel. Thank you for saying that. Thank you for putting this in the public space so that men can walk by and they can see it and hopefully consider their behavior and their interactions with women and just I'm trying to also spark conversation amongst the people of a community. So not just sparking conversation, but sparking conversation of the people on this block, on this corner, in this community. You know, we talk a lot about street harassment online, and we talk a lot about it with our friends or people who experience the same stuff. But how do we spark that conversation amongst a little boy walking by on the corner with a little girl, or an old man and his son, or, you know, something like that? And so what I'm trying to do with the work is really affect the people who live around it, who walk by and who see it, which again is why I think that placement in city and community is so important, which is why I want to travel to, you know, certain cities across the country, why putting up that piece in Oklahoma was so important to me, having grown up in Oklahoma and understanding the racial dynamics in a place like that. That piece would not have the same effect in Brooklyn as it did in Oklahoma City, you know what I mean? So that's why I think location is important when we're talking about public art. And yeah, I just want people to really examine themselves after they see this work.
Right.
You know?
Do you feel like artists from marginalized communities, women, people of color, are more likely to do public art because of that accessibility factor and because of sort of barriers to more traditional art spaces, museums, which are still pretty overwhelmingly white and male?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I think graffiti started that way, right? It's you know, you have these young kids who are just going out in the streets and making art with what they have and where they have it. And so you pick up a spray can and you put something on the wall and you tag it with your name. You have this sense of autonomy over this space, this environment that's now yours, right? You're claiming it.
Yeah.
And so as a woman, a Black woman, putting up images of women who have autonomy over themselves, it's really about taking back that space physically, theoretically. And yeah, for me, that's another reason why street art and public art is so important for me, because it really is about the space that you're taking, the environment that you're kind of reclaiming for yourself.
So we're in a difficult political time. How do times like this sort of impact you as an artist?
It's a lot.
Yeah.
I've been feeling a lot of things for the past, I guess, couple of months.
Yeah.
And so as an artist, it's having to sit with all of that and then decide which direction I need to go in. Because it's not just being an artist, it's being a person first, right? It's how am I feeling about this just as a person? And as a person, it's just, it's a lot of emotions. It's a lot of, it's a lot to take in.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's deciding which direction to move in as an artist. What's the next step that I take?
Right.
You know, I did that piece in Oklahoma in November after the election, and I was feeling like I have to do something. This is what I'm going to do. I'm going to be home in Oklahoma for the holidays, which is a very red Republican place. Let me do something that speaks to how I'm feeling, and I think a lot of the folks that I know are feeling. But, you know, as a person, I guess just think about myself first and think about, you know, my mental health, think about my emotional health, and then move forward from there. But I can say that there has been a lot of good art over the past few weeks that I have seen from my friends and just from the people that I know, and artists that I know. It's really fueled a lot of us to create some really amazing stuff and to take what we're thinking and we're feeling and really put it in our art. So I'm kind of inspired, you know? I'm like, I'm devastated and I'm, you know, just bewildered every day that this is our reality. But I'm also inspired and definitely motivated. So I think this year we'll see a lot of activism through art in some really powerful ways.
How do you negotiate, you know, wanting to create for your fans, for the people who are following you, but also needing to take care of yourself first? Do you feel like a pressure to produce?
That is a good question. The answer is yes, I do feel a pressure to produce, which goes back to that self-care thing. This whole self-care thing is something that I'm just getting used to. Because, yeah, I feel like I have to make work. I have to do something. I have to be out there. I have to have a say in everything that's going on. I do feel like I am failing at that a lot of the time when I don't comment on a certain, you know, news article, something that just happened. Or if I don't, you know, if there's another Black guy that is killed by the police or a Black woman that's killed by the police, if I don't say something, if I don't create a piece of art immediately in reaction to it, that I'm not contributing to the movement. If I don't, you know, if I don't have this immediate output, that I am, you know, not doing my job.
Right.
And so I do have to, you know, I think about that a lot, and I worry that I'm not doing enough a lot of the time. But I think the way that I reconcile that is that I know what I want to do, and I know what I want to say. I know what's important to me. I know who I care about and what I care about. And my intentions are great. And I think that if I take my time to create artwork, there's nothing wrong with that. Right. Or if I take my time to simply be okay enough to make the artwork, then there's nothing wrong with that. But I think what it comes down to is that I'm in it, you know? I think that we all play a role, and we all, I'm not necessarily going to be the person at every single march, you know, but I am in it in the way that I'm in it. And that is creating the art that I create. And doing it well and making good art. I'm also trying to practice my craft and make sure that I'm making good stuff and not just putting out anything that's just kind of half-assed just because I feel like I have to immediately put something out, you know? So that's a really long answer.
No, but I think that that's, but I also think that that's really good advice for people, not just art, you know, not just artists, but like you do whatever you put out into the world, you want it to be substantive and like strategic and thought out, and you can't do that. And I think particularly with activism, people don't realize, you know, it's a 24-hour-a-day, 7-day-a-week thing that is on your shoulder. It's not like a 9-to-5 job where you like shut it off when you go home. It's it's a constantly moving thing. And I think I'm glad that you brought up like taking care of yourself first, and I think that that's really good advice for other people who, you know, write, create, whatever they do. It's so hard to put something out into the world when you're in a really terrible and bad place, and I think that that will resonate with a lot of people. So I know you do interviews as a part of your work. Can you talk a little bit about that and how that came to be?
Yeah. So I think that's, I'm glad you asked that. That's a good question, because I think a lot of times people see the finished product and they see the site of the work. You know, you walk down the street and you see one of my posters, one of my murals, and that's just it. Like it just appeared out of nowhere. But the process to getting to that work is really important and very much so a part of the art, just as the final drawing or mural is. So I interview individuals about their experiences. Depending on what the work is about, we're going to talk about what those specific experiences are. So if we're talking about street harassment, I'm interviewing individual women, asking them to tell me about their lives, their experiences with sexism, with sexual harassment. And from those interviews, I pull quotes, I pull out words, and I come up with the captions that go underneath these drawings. And I do that for most of my work, so especially for the Stop Telling Them to Smile series, but also this new series that you'll see that's at Brick right now, called America is Black / Not Going Anywhere, where I interview folks. I sit down and I have conversations with them. I want to know what they're thinking, what they're feeling, what their lives are like. You know, I understand how I experience the world, but I want to know how you experience the world and what you have to say about that. What do you have to say to the public about how you are experiencing the public space? And those interviews really do fuel the rest of the work. Right. So I do the interviews, then I shoot their photographs, then I do the drawings from those photographs, and I compose these murals and these posters from that. So it's a lot from beginning to end, you know? And I think that stuff is just as important as the final piece.
But it's like this invisible labor.
Exactly. Yeah, it's again, it's a lot of labor that goes into creating the work that we're doing. And having those conversations, again, it's emotional. So it's a lot of emotional labor, right? And it's a lot. I mean, I love it. I feel like I'm complaining, but I love everything that I do. But especially when we're talking about social practice art, I think that sometimes, again, maybe it's not taking as seriously because that final output or that labor, that process isn't always seen.
Right.
So we don't know the time and the hours that are spent visiting people and going to communities and talking with them and collaborating with individuals in order to get to that final piece. But all of that is important and impacts the final work.
So obviously there's a tremendous amount of activism happening right now. But it does feel like as people are looking to do things, so much of that focuses on policy, right? Mm-hmm. Rightfully so. There's a, you know, we need to focus on policy.
Yeah.
But what can we do to make sure that creativity and art and culture is supported and bolstered during a time like this, when we are so afraid and there is this sort of sense of urgency around like hard, you know, quote unquote hard issues?
Yeah, that's a good question. You know, I think one way to support the arts is through money. You know, artists, we need money, we need funding. I think we spend a lot of times not creating or trying to create, but failing at it because we just don't have the resources to do it.
Yeah.
And I think especially right now with this administration and our political climate, the arts are going to suffer, especially when it comes to resources and funding.
Yeah.
So I think that for the artists who are really out there making an impact with the work that they do, we need to support them and we need to like throw money at them so that they continue to make the work that they are making. You know, I do think that people look at policy, which we should be looking at, right, for sure. But I think also we have to look at culture and who's influencing culture. You know, I think racism and sexism is not going to change with a policy or a legislation. I think that it has to change also, which is our society and our social issues and our social constructs. And that's culture. And I think culture can be changed. And we have to look at who is helping to influence that.
Right.
And the arts are definitely doing that. Mm-hmm. And so I think we can't forget about the arts. And really, by not forgetting about the arts, that means supporting them, you know?
Yeah.
It doesn't necessarily have to be monetary, but, you know, just supporting the arts in whatever way that you can.
A problem online has been people sort of passing around pieces or screenshots of art without crediting, right? Like, anything like that that folks can do better.
I think that's a huge thing.
Yeah.
I'm glad that you said that, especially for visual artists. Yeah. A lot of the work that we get and the opportunities that we get just come from people seeing our work and knowing who we are and being able to reach out to us. So, yeah, if you see something, a visual image that you really like and you have to share it, try to credit that person. Mm-hmm. And it's really not that hard to do. Just do a Google image search.
Right, reverse Google image search. You can do it.
Just do a Google image search, find out who did this work, and then post it and say, this was done by this person.
Yeah.
Because it really does help us, you know. You know, but I think that we can't undervalue artists and we can't undervalue the labor, especially that women artists are doing. You know, it takes a lot of emotional labor, a lot of physical labor. Doing murals is hard work, you know, physically, emotionally, everything. It's a lot of work.
So is there anything that you're working on now or next or thinking about that you can tell our listeners about?
Yeah, so I have a couple of shows up right now. I have some work at Brick in Brooklyn on Fulton Street, Brick Arts Media, and it'll be up until May, and it's kind of a compilation of some pieces that I did over the past few weeks where I was interviewing people about the reactions to, you know, this new administration, like how they're feeling. A lot of young people of color, queer folks, artists, activists. I also have a show open in New Orleans right now about mental health.
Oh, cool.
I think it's kind of important to talk about that right now. It's not something that I often talk about.
Yeah.
But I was invited to be a part of this group show at Pelican Bomb, and I wanted to look at my home first. So I interviewed my mother about her issues with depression and how she's feeling now as a Black woman, dealing with depression and the conversation around that, how we don't often talk about that in the Black community, I think, especially with Black women. But I think we experience so much trauma all the time, and that is important for us to do so. So if you're in New Orleans, you can check out that show where I'm doing that. And then public art, I'm trying to travel around the country this year. I am still figuring it out, but my goal is to go to Middle America, go to some small rural towns, and nice. Put up some anti-white supremacy installations. We're going to see how that goes. But my piece in Oklahoma City was sort of the catalyst for that.
Right.
You know, after I did that piece, I really wanted to be like, I should take this everywhere. So I'm going to see how that goes.
So I hope anyone who supports the arts hears that. Bring Tatiana out to your middle American city and town to put some stuff up. That's very exciting.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for coming in and for talking to me. And I hope that our listeners will go out and check out your work, and we'll put links up. And I hope that this sort of inspires folks to think about art a little bit more. This week, at least.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Visual artist Tatiana Fazlalizadeh. That's it for this week. What Would a Feminist Do? Is produced by Maggie Freeling. Katie Enders is the supervising producer. Our intro song is by Rook Day. If you like this podcast, please take a minute to rate us and leave a review on iTunes. It will help get the word out to others that What Would a Feminist Do? Is something they should be listening to. I really appreciate it. I'm Jessica Valenti for The Guardian. I hope you'll join me again soon for What Would a Feminist Do?